Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this ordinary council meeting on 27th November. I'll ask the acting CEO and welcome him to the position to say the prayer, please.
Almighty God, under whose providence we hold responsibility for this city, grant us wisdom to understand its present needs, foresight to anticipate its future growth, and grace to serve our fellow citizens with integrity and selfless devotion. And to thee be all blessing and glory forever. Amen.
Thank you very much. I'll now say the acknowledgement for country. I respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Whadjuk Noongar people of Western Australia, and pay my respects to elders past and present. It's a privilege to be standing on Whadjuk Noongar country. I'll now declare the meeting formally open, this meeting of council formally open. In terms of any apologies, I understand there's nil, Mr. Acting CEO.
That's right, Chair Commissioner.
Thank you. I now move to question time and public notification deputation. There are some questions and deputations. I'll deal with any questions first. And we have a question, I understand, from... Who is it? Mr. Jang. So, would you, Mr. Jang, like to read the question out, or we take it as read? Okay, please come forward.
Good afternoon, councillors. I speak in my capacity of the private owner of 1 Hague Park Circle, East Perth, and this question relates to agenda item 13.9. So surrounding residents will be severely impacted by the proposed planning scheme, particularly in this current soft property market, which has been acknowledged in the proposal, and which stated that there were strong community views for new development to occur. So my question is, could the councillors please explain, question one, how would the proposed amendment represent the interests of electors, ratepayers, and residents of the district, as per section 2.10 of the Local Government Act? And question two, do I go on to question two? Okay, so question two is, in addition to the significant underrepresentation of the stated five submissions received over the latest version of the proposal, how many in total participated in all the consultation workshops since December 2013, and what were the key issues raised? Following that, what consideration has been given to this proposed amendment on the current state of the property market, impact on house prices around the proposal, and the reduction of existing ratepayers' enjoyment of the existing amenities? This includes congestion created by the potential development and parking impacts. And my last question will be, why is this proposal still going ahead despite strong opposition from surrounding residents? Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. The debate, or do you want to answer those now?
Yeah.
Now? Thank you.
Okay, so in response to the first question, the City of Perth Council has responsibility for the orderly and proper planning of the City of Perth. The City of Perth has engaged closely with the community to ensure that their views help to inform the preparation of the design guidelines for this land. In answer to the second question, on the 15th of March 2016, the Council resolved to undertake extensive community consultation with local residents and community groups to develop a set of built form guidelines for the site. This included consideration of three design concepts for the site, which was prepared taking into account the issues raised by the community through the consultation on the previous development applications, and with the aim of enhancing the amenity of the residents of Hague Park Circle through the provision of a public space along the Hague Park Circle frontage. comprehensive community engagement was undertaken on the three design concepts. 51 submissions were received, including 45 completed surveys. Over 80% of respondents did not support any of the proposed concept, and a petition was received strongly objecting to all guidelines, proposals and concepts for the site and to the lifting of the restricted covenant over the site. The petition was formally presented to Council on the 22nd of November 2016. In August 2017, further community consultation, including two community workshops, were held. A total of 300 invitations were sent out to surrounding properties and business owners, with 40 people attending the first workshop and 29 attending the second workshop. The purpose of the first workshop was to present the background and the design work done to date and to seek community feedback on the proposed built form and the land uses of to be incorporated into the new provisions and guidelines. The purpose of the second workshop was to seek comments on the potential planning provisions and guidelines that could be applied to the site. An outcomes report summarising the results of the workshops was then prepared and provided to all applicants. Some of the recommended changes to the provisions discussed during the workshops included the following: removal of the transient residential as a contemplated use to a prohibited use, introduction of a provision requiring new development to be articulated in the manner to respond to the rhythm and verticality of the adjacent townhouse development, introduction of a provision requiring a clear differentiation of pedestrian and vehicular movements at the access points to Sovereign Close and Hague Park Circle, amendment to the plot ratio from 2 to 10 to 1.5 to 1, and allow a public fee-paying car park at basement level that is exempt from the calculation of the plot ratio floor area to provide an incentive for the provision of the replacement facility on site. And that was the answer to that question. To the third question, the scheme amendment and design principles providing a planning framework to guide decisions if a development application is lodged for the land. Any further development applications will include a traffic impact assessment. And the fourth question, the planning scheme for the area identifies that the land is capable of development. As the site has a plot ratio and land uses allocated to the site, previous development approvals reflect this, although these have not proceeded. The issue is that there are no design guidelines in place to control the form and design of any potential future development. The scheme amendment and planning guidelines before Council provide clear controls in terms of land use, built form and design to ensure that any potential future development complements and does not conflict with existing development in the neighbourhood. In the scheme amendment, the design guidelines do not proceed, there would not be any design controls in place to guide any future development applications. And the last question was, careful consideration has been given to all community feedback in the preparation of the scheme amendment and design guidelines.
Thank you. Those answers, they'll be recorded in the minutes. I'll now move to question time for the public. Are there any other questions? If not, I'll move to deputations. I understand there's a deputation from Dr. Shamir Jamil and Mr. Askar Jamil, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, from 30 and 32 Hague Circle, East Perth. They wish to come forward and make their deputation, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. So I'm just speaking on behalf of Mr. Askar Jamil, who is my father. He's on his way here. I believe he's just running a little bit behind. So I've been on this forum many times before over a number of years, obviously reciting the same concerns I've had, which I'll do again today. And it's not the first time I've been here, so I think this is a little bit repeat, but the Council does have all our concerns in writing. I also speak on behalf of the majority of people who I think are against this proposal from the outset. I did understand that there were some numbers mentioned as to the consultation process, However, may I just say that the numbers there were heavily biased towards architects from firms who had a vested interest to ensure that the majority of people there felt a similar way. I certainly felt a little biased and pushed at the time of the consultations. It was almost like an opinion was drafted by us. So I don't think those numbers necessarily reflect the true sentiments of the people in the area. First and foremost, my own personal residence is number 38 Park Circle. I invested in that in 1998. I bought land with understanding that it would have nothing but a car park in front. I designed the house with my lifetime investment so that it would have windows facing what I call the sun. Now, during the course of these proposals over the years, various architects and development firms have given solace and shadows as to what would appear a bright street. However, we've had a crane to that site many times, and a lot of that has been misrepresentation of these. So that's been a concern of ours. I don't want to live in darkness, and I have two parents that reside next door. They're both elderly and 75, and certainly they don't want to live in darkness, and that's what would happen with the building of any firm, particularly the ones in question here. Secondly, when you build a house and you invest a significant amount of money on a 200 square meter block, which is what I have, you'd like to think that that's your retirement plan. If in a few years' time the covenant then changes, or there's yet to change, without any consideration of the understanding of purchase and land contract, it to me feels a major breach of a private contract. And of course, any parties that would support that would be, I think, breaching a fundamental point of principle for Australian people. This is highlighted in the movie The Castle, and I think this is any different. It's people with individual concerns who feel they are being led by organisations with a vested profit to develop in the area. Over the years, the issue as to whether the car park needed to be developed because of a noise concern was just a, you know, it's a concocted set of arguments in order to do something there. I lived there since 1998 or 1999. We've never had an issue out of the cross of the car park, so to my parents. I've never had any noise complaints, and I've been a very light sleeper. So all these arguments were led around in order to convince council and people so that they could develop something there, something just so that somebody could perhaps have better revenue. And, you know, ownership has changed and plans have come and gone, different proposals have been put forward. But in principle, it's much the same. It is against the will of everyone in the area. The traffic flow in the area is already going to be exceeding what was previously promised because of the new developments from the stadium and the new bridge. So the further output, the load of residents in that area, I think, would just be something we'd favour. This is right across the road. It's 4 metres from my house. It's 4 metres from 38 Park Circle, and I think certainly it is. It's not far from the other residents that are present here as well. So we definitely strongly oppose this, and I think that it would be in contravention of simple principles of the rights of residents. It doesn't have to be an entire 80 people. It could be someone that's most affected. And my boundary is 20 metres, and it faces this gigantic proposal, which I don't like in form or shape. And the numbers of the consultation. The process by which the consultations happen, I didn't get an invite. Now, I did live there, and I believe in my Master Centre, but I didn't get one. So, you know, there was a lot of flaws in the way the consultations happened. It almost felt engineered, and I had no problems in being honest here and saying that it felt very engineered from the outset and throughout the whole thing. And the summaries were given so that they reflected a sentiment which is not true. We have a very close group of residents and community in that area, and we do talk amongst each other, and certainly I think to say that you know, that there was any majority to support this would be a misleading fact. So I speak on behalf of number 32 Hague Park Circle as well. I think that's pretty much that needs to be said. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There's no more deputations, I understand it. Thank you. In that case, I'll move to the next item. On the
I think Mr. Charles had one from the group as well.
Yes, certainly, if he wishes to come forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I attempt to support the comments made by the previous speaker in that the feeling was that
Can you use the microphone? We can't hear
at all. Okay. The feeling was that the way that the consultation process occurred, it felt like it was a conclusion that was being addressed and they were moving towards that conclusion. And the conclusion was that that was a property that was ideal for development and would go through the process of getting it to that stage. I wanted to reinforce that the block is completely different to other properties insofar as it's got a restrictive covenant. To me, that's a very important issue. The restrictive covenant was a consideration when people bought the property, and also when the residents around them bought their properties. So insofar as the properties surrounding that have got interconnecting covenants, that all of our properties got a covenant that reflect the covenant on the Lot 70 as well. So there was obviously a very strong reason for keeping that property as a car park. We know that to the extent of saying we understand guidelines would be a good idea if legally the covenant was removed, so then we could fall back with a safety net of having some guidelines which were acceptable. Some residents still don't like the guidelines. Some are prepared to accept them, providing the car park is maintained. So in these new guidelines, the disappointment that we have is that there's no requirement to maintain the 48 to 52 car parking bays, which was in the original plans for all that area. The whole area was developed as a concept for a village. It's not St George's Terrace style of living. It's almost like a suburban style of living, and that recognises the fact that people need to have access to and from. Ladies going to hairdressers, the figures being put forward that there's 1,000 car bays close by. Well, the being close by is relative. A lady who goes to a hairdresser having her hair done and it's raining, you may not consider 200 metres as a relative close proximity car parking. So it is important for those businesses to have parking, and that's been an issue there, and the businesses have been lobbying to have some free time parking. So parking is an issue. The restrictive covenant is definitely an issue that was there at the beginning. We all had to comply with the covenant. We had covenants put on our properties that recognised the car park. The brochures referred to that property as a car park in perpetuity. So it represented that particular area as to how it was to be developed. Now, if it's got to be changed, the residents really need to be included and be happy with the change so that they're better off. And at the moment, we don't believe they'll be better off if there's a development there without any provision for the car park. James, that's really what I wanted to say. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir. There's no more deputations, I understand it now. So we'll now move to next item, which is members on leave of absence, application for leave of absence. Are there any applications, Mr. Acting CEO?
No, Chair of Commissioner.
Thank you. I'll now move to confirmation of the minutes. I would suggest I'd seek guidance from commissioners that I want to deal with this in bulk or separately. Okay, in that case, could someone move confirmation of the minutes of, firstly, the special council meeting held on the 29th of October 2018, secondly, the ordinary council meeting held on the 30th of October 2018, thirdly, the special council meeting held on the 13th of November 2018, and finally, the fourth item is agenda briefing session held on the 20th of November 2018 as a true and correct record. Do I have a mover, please?
So moved, Chair.
Commissioner Hammond?
Seconded.
Commissioner McMath, I have no objection to the confirmation of the minutes, so I declare the motion carried. Announcement by the Chair of the Commissioners. The only announcement I have is to welcome Mr. Murray Jorgensen in his position as Acting CEO and welcome him to his first meeting.
Thank you.
So now move disclosure of members' interests. Does any commissioner or employee wish to disclose an interest and its nature in any item contained within the agenda?
No, Chair.
And I have none.
Yes, Chair. I would like to declare an interest in item 15.1, which is a report prepared by the Manager of Governance in relation to confirmation of the appointment title of Chief Executive Officer. I believe I have an impartiality interest in that matter.
Thank you. We'll note that for the record. And obviously, when it comes to that matter, you certainly don't vote on the issue. So, are there any move to questions by members of which due notice has been given? Are there any questions?
No, Chair.
No, Chair, thank you. Correspondence, any correspondence?
No, Chair.
Any petitions?
No, Chair, Commissioner.
Thank you. I'll now move to item any matters for which the meeting may be closed. Are there any matters, Mr. Acting CEO, please?
Yes, Chair, Commissioner. In accordance with Section 523(2) of the Local Government Act, should a commissioner wish to discuss the content of the confidential attachments in relation to items 13(13), 13(14) and 13(19), it is recommended that Council resolve to close the meeting to the public prior to discussion of the item.
Thank you, and we note that accordingly. In the instance, we need to address those confidential matters. Thank you for that. I'll move to now an en bloc motion, and that the en bloc motion would be that with the exception of the following items, which will be considered separately, the Office and Committee recommendations for the remaining items, which I'll refer to in a minute, be adopted en bloc. The exception items are 13.1, which requires an absolute majority, 13.8. I'm also going to suggest 13.9, due to the deputations, be included as an exception, 13.12, 13.13 requires an absolute majority, 13.14, 15, and 13.19 and 13.20, and lastly, 13.21 by absolute majority required. So on that basis, could I have someone move that, with the exception of those items, which are to be considered separately, the Office and Committee recommendations for the remaining items, which will now be 13.2 to 13.7 inclusive, 13.10 and 13.11, 13.16 to 13.18 inclusive, and 13.22 be adopted by Council en bloc by an absolute majority decision. Do I have a mover?
I'll move that motion.
Commissioner McMath.
Second.
Thank you, and I'll support the motion, so I declare that carried. So we now move to item 13.1, which is 68 or 100 Milligan Street, Perth, proposed removal of existing sky signs. So, which commissioner wishes to raise this item? But I'm just making sure there's no discussion. Absolute majority decision required, so if that's the case, could someone move the recommendation? Commissioner Hammond, Commissioner McMath, and I support it. So I declare the officer's recommendation endorsed and carried accordingly. Now move to item 13.8, I think. So I think both commissioners had some aspects they wish to raise on this matter, so which commissioner would like to speak first in the matter?
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond.
Okay, Commissioner McMath.
Chair, I would like to speak to this item.
Certainly.
I would like to commend this very important cultural development plan 2018-2024 and thank the staff for their preparation of what I think will be a very important
foundation document to guide the city going forward, and encourage our community to read and respond and contribute to its final formation. Thank you.
Commissioner Hearn.
Thank you, Chair. Look, yes, it's a great body of work, and it has the potential to pave the way, if you like, to integrate culture per se into the cultural fabric of the city. However, in saying that, as I have suggested before, there is no strategic expenditure plan within the draft plan, and I would certainly hope, if I could get a comment from the Chief Executive Officer with regards to this, that any consultation of the plan is qualified, that many of the initiatives, albeit that they are very sound and exciting initiatives, at this time are not funded.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond, Mr. Acting CEO.
Thanks, Chair. We can undertake to ensure that any communication that goes out in relation to the draft planning covers that matter.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'd endorse Commissioner Hammond's comments. Is there any further issues any commissioner wants to raise on the matter of the report? If that is the case, bearing in mind this is a draft plan to go out for public comment, could someone then move the officer's recommendation, which is that the council endorse the draft cultural development plan to go out to the public comment for a period of 12 weeks, having regard also that the point of view of funding will also be part of the issue raised.
I'll move that motion.
Thank you.
Happy to second, Chair.
Thank you. There's no dissent, so I declare that recommendation endorsed accordingly. Sorry, we now move to item 13.9, which is final adoption of Amendment Number 3 to the City of Perth Local Planning Scheme Number 26, etc. Bearing in mind we've had a deputation and views expressed on this, I'll open it up for any questions of staff initially prior to considering the recommendation. Any questions from commissioners?
I have a question.
Hey, Commissioner McMath.
Thank you. My question of staff relates, in light of the previous speakers, with respect to information regarding the restrictive covenant on page 347 of the papers. In reading the restrictive covenants, I see that the city has sought legal advice that has confirmed that the restrictive covenant is a private agreement between the MRA and the landowner and does not form part of the planning framework. Noting that information, are the officers able to provide any examples of previous precedents where the cities have to grapple with this sort of restrictive covenant influencing, if not being determining, in the consideration of this planning approval?
We don't.
Yes, over to appropriate director, please. Thank you.
We can't recall any at the moment, but we could do a look into it to see if that has happened previously.
Thank you. Commissioner McMath, any other questions?
No, I don't have any other questions.
Commissioner Hammond.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This relates to the restrictive covenant as well, and the submissions that we have received are contending that once that restrictive covenant is in place, it's in place forever, and that in that regard then that the city should treat it as some form of planning consideration when coming to a decision. I just wanted to seek some confirmation from the relevant officer, Chair, that a restrictive covenant is essentially a contract between the property developer and the owner, and therefore it is quite difficult for a statutory planning authority to use a restrictive covenant as a valid planning consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond. Staff?
Yes, through the chair. excuse me. The restrictive covenant is, certainly in this case, the city is not a party to that covenant. And it's usually an agreement in place, as you say, between the property owner and, in this case, it was the MRA, who was the planning authority at that time. And certainly case law and the legal advice that we've sought does confirm that it's not a valid consideration in making a planning decision.
Thank you, Chair. Any other questions, Commissioner? Hammond?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a couple of comments I wish to make on this matter. First of all, I understand the issues raised in the deputation. But I am satisfied that there has been significant consultation carried over a number of years. And I also acknowledge that ratepayers have the right to make a representation to the council, as it may exist at the time, on the issues before it. In planning considerations, bearing in mind we're talking about a planning scheme amendment, the planning scheme needs to project forward, and whilst it's irrelevant to consider representations made, they need to be examined in the context of the planning's horizons and also the planning objectives of the amendment. Having said that, I think I understand representations around the car park, and also I acknowledge the design guidelines have been developed, I think, quite comprehensively. Having said that, the key issue is the car park. Regardless of whether or not the covenants exist or not, it is obviously a key issue in terms of potential development. I acknowledge the potential for any development on that site to be subject, could generate overshadowing, but I'd also make the point that any development of the car park would be a separate development approval process and considerations. What I would like to see happen is that, notwithstanding the very comprehensive planning report, that we have some appropriate provision, which would probably come back to council at its next meeting, on how the car park is to be treated rather than just left alone as a standalone issue, so that if any development is proposed, and there's none proposed at the moment as I understand, that it goes through a proper consultation process. Obviously having regard for the design guidelines, and they are guidelines, they're not written in concrete, if I can put it that way, so any application has to be considered on its merits, but certainly having regard for the issues raised by the residents. So my position on this matter is that not to adopt the amendment without modification, but adopt it with a modification which addresses specifically provisions to be brought back to the council for consideration at its December meeting, because I don't want to hold up the amendment, bearing in mind the process it's been through relating to the car park, and I seek then, obviously why I'm postponing that to December, is to seek appropriate advice on how we can address these issues raised by residents in terms of any development application for the car park, if one was to occur. So I would move that this matter be item be deferred for further advice from the staff in terms of how we can deal with relation to any issues relating to the car park, its use or future use, including any issues which would need to be taken into account of any development application. I hope that's clear enough. Do I have a seconder for that, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. Commissioner Hammond, do you wish to say any comment on...
Could I ask a question, Chair?
Certainly.
Yeah, the objective of this proposed deferral and change is to afford some protection to the amenity of the surrounding residents should that site be developed into the future.
And also any other appropriate considerations which would seek advice from staff.
Okay. Would such a proposal include consultation with those community members?
It could do, but that would be a decision of the council in December.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
But I'm certainly not opposed to discussions in interim. So that's a motion I've moved and seconded by Commissioner McMath. Is there any dissent to that motion? No, in that case, the motion I've moved has been endorsed accordingly. Thank you. I hope the gallery understand the intent of what I've just moved. Thank you. Now move to item... I need new glasses. Okay, 13.12, thank you. My understanding is Commissioner Hammond had some issues on this matter. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Look, as Chair of the Liquor Record, which is comprises of the owners of significant entertainment businesses within the Northbridge Entertainment Precinct, this is a key issue in the context of not only protecting their own businesses but also for protecting the amenity of any future residential development. And you would be aware of previous questions that I have asked the staff in relation to seriously entertained planning proposals, and I accept the answer that it's certainly not up that stage yet. Could I please ask the question though of the relevant officer is, when and if the time comes for this to be able to be implemented in one shape, way, shape or form, will the staff be given it a priority in the context of treating it as a seriously entertained planning appraisal instead of waiting until the entire process is carried through?
Through you, that question to the relevant staff, please.
So the boundary is included and taken into account in our city planning strategy. Mm-hmm. So we are moving it ahead with that in that process.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions, Commissioner Hammond?
No, Chair.
Commissioner Eden.
Amend the motion.
Okay. Just a clarification. My understanding has been close liaison on this proposal for the Department of the Planning, Lands and Heritage, is that correct? Thank you. And this would be also subject to public comment.
Yes, Chair. The City of Perth has been working closely with the Minister on this. We actually have been chairing, or I've been chairing, a working group to try and get some guidelines in place in this area, so it's something we have supported.
Thank you for that. And certainly I think the thrust of this issue is something that needs to be addressed from a planning perspective, as the issue needs to be clearly resolved one way or the other in the future for the development of the Northbridge Entertainment Area. So I support the recommendation. So do I have a move for the recommendation, please? Commissioner Hammond. Oh, second Commissioner McMath. I have no dissent. So I declare the recommendation of the officers endorsed and adopted accordingly. We now move to item 13.13, where an absolute majority is required. That's a tender for street lighting and electrical upgrades. Firstly, are there any questions of staff on this matter?
No questions.
Commissioner Hammond?
No, Chair.
If not, then I'll take the opportunity to move the recommendations, numbers 1 to 5 inclusive. Do I have a seconder?
Seconded.
Seconder, Commissioner McMath. Beat you, Mr. Commissioner Hammond. There's no dissent. If not, I declare the recommendation as read endorsed. Thank you. We now move to item 13.14. Commissioner McMath, I understand you have a query on this issue.
Thank you, Chair. My question to the administration relates to promotion 1 on page 551 of the council papers, noting that promotion 1 is focused on supporting our retailers by discounted parking in the Cultural Centre, City Place and Pier Street. My question is whether any consideration has been made to also support the food and beverage vendors in these areas by the consideration of extending the parking beyond 9 p.m. For after shopping longer stay in the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. Start, just a comment. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Through the Chair, the parking promotion is built on the one that was done last year, which was aimed at shoppers, and that's why we've done it again this year. It can be extended, but no, we have not taken into consideration beyond the 9 p.m. for the F&B side at this stage, because it's been aimed at family-friendly and close proximity car parks.
Thank you. Any other questions, Commissioner McMath?
Thank you, Chair. Would it be possible for the outcome of this promotion to be reviewed in the context of making a consideration for further years with respect to a broadening beyond our retail shoppers to further support our food and beverage outlets in the city? Please.
Thank you.
Through the Chair, absolutely. Based on the outcome of this, we had already planned to look at fit for purpose and community versus commercial benefits, so we can definitely include that.
Thank you.
Any other questions from any Commissioner?
No, thank you, Chair.
I've got none. In that case, I take it, Commissioner McMath, you have been satisfied with the answers?
Thank you, Chair.
If that is the case, could someone move the recommendation as read or any amendment thereto?
I'm happy to move that.
Thank you, Commissioner Minger. Commissioner Hammond and I have no dissent, so I declare the recommendation endorsed as numbers 1 to 4. Thank you. Now move to the financial statements, which is item 1315. Commissioner McMath, I understand you have some queries on this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My query relates to the capital expenditure variance for the period to September 2018, outlined on page 569 of the Council papers. My question relates to the variance against capital expenditure, which year-to-date we had budgeted $7.7 million or thereabouts, and we've expended $3.4. I'd like to inquire as to the reasons why we're behind with respect to our capital expenditure program and seek assurance that we have adequate project management in place for the delivery of the capital program. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. Could the relevant officer please answer that question? Thank you.
Thanks for that. I can provide some additional information perhaps. So as Commissioner McMath points out, the variance to the end of September was about $4.3 million. There are a couple of specific reasons included in the variance schedule there that I'm aware of. So Commissioners will be aware that there were some delays to some IT-related projects regarding support for digital workplace enhancements, smart cities, core systems upgrade. So that's certainly not the majority of the variance, but certainly did contribute to a delay in those particular projects. In relation to the capital works program in general, the trend that you see here, I would say, is not unusual in the context of the city's traditional capital program. In my view, officers tend to be overly optimistic in projecting cash flows for capital projects. It's an issue that's particularly prevalent in government agencies and local government. and in effect officers have overestimated the amount of expenditure they believe that would be incurred by 30 September. Having said that, one of the last items on tonight's agenda is the budget review. So you can rest assured that officers were asked the same question, and as part of the budget review they were asked to go back and have a look at pretty much all projects. And as noted in the budget review, there's only been a pullback in known projects of probably a few million dollars. I guess the answer to the question is that there is a belief that there will be a catch-up in expenditure in future months.
Thank you. Thank you for that response. Any other questions, Councillor McMath? As Commissioner McMath?
No, Chair.
Commissioner Hammond?
No, thank you, Chair.
I've got some comments. I can understand the comments made by the officer. I just want to flag that a more conservative approach to projects and budgets should be borne in mind for the 2019-2020 budget. And I would rather have a schedule which we know can be implemented on behalf of the community, so the community is aware that they will be implemented. And secondly, if there are any doubts, that we have appropriate contingency funds set aside with identification of projects which would then be considered as subject to relevant timely budget reviews, that if we're not meeting targets on some areas we can replace it with another project which may have a similar priority. But that's for consideration for the staff through the Acting CEO for forthcoming discussions. What Mr. Mianich has outlined in terms of government and local government is correct, but I put on record it's a pet hobby horse of mine in that I do not believe we should budget for functions if we're not sure we can implement them effectively. It misleads the community that things will be done in a certain timeline, but equally things do happen which delay projects. But equally, I think where there's an opportunity, rather than locking funds away to something which can't be delivered until another financial year, there should be flexibility for the council to deliver other projects which may not have had the same priority at the time but would still have a priority for consideration if we had the funds available, rather than being constrained to set agenda, if I could call it that. So on that basis, that's my comments on that, for what it's worth. Having said that, I'm happy to move that we receive the financial statements and financial activity statements for the period ending 30 September 2018 as detailed in the attachment. Do I have a seconder for that, please? Commissioner Hammond. Any dissent? Commissioner McMath?
No.
If not, I declare that the recommendation which I've moved, it is endorsed accordingly. Thank you. We now move, I believe, to item 13.19. Correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Risk management quarterly update. I understand Commissioner McMathew had some queries on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My queries relate to the acknowledgement of various risks that have been identified in the preceding quarter, 107 to 112. Firstly, I'd like to commend the administration for having a risk framework which continues to identify risks within the city. I do note in doing so the control effectiveness across all of those bar one is deemed inadequate. So my question to the management is whether we are confident of being able to address the issues identified in the risk identification that have a residual risk rating of high in a timely manner as indicated in the papers. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner McMath. which officer wishes to address that issue? Okay, Mr. Ridgewell, thank you.
Thank you. Through the Chair, the risk treatment action plans will be incorporated into business unit plans and monitored for actions and will then be reported through to the Audit and Risk Committee. Following feedback from the most recent Audit and Risk Committee meeting, we'll be able to identify the movements in control effectiveness, which was one of the requests that was made. So we'll be able to monitor that progress through the Audit and Risk Committee.
Thank you. Does that answer your question? Commissioner Hammond, any questions? So, I have a question in relation to your answer. Does that mean that there will be appropriate action in a timely way to address those issues that Commissioner McMath has raised? Because some of those aspects are of concern to me personally as a Commissioner, that these should not be left hanging around, if I could use it. Expression. So is it intended from your answer that there will be priority actions to address these issues? Thank you.
Thank you. Through the Chair, yes, the Executive Leadership Team also run a Audit and Risk Committee, Corporate Audit and Risk Committee, and they'll be monitoring for the actions and making sure the prioritisation is appropriate and responded to accordingly. It will be seen as a priority to make sure that we can reduce the risk ratings.
Thank you. On that basis, is there any more discussion or questions of staff on this matter?
No.
Thank you. If not, I'll move the recommendation that we receive the Risk Management Quarterly Update for November 2018. Do I have a seconder, please? Commissioner Hammond, is there any dissent?
No.
If there's no dissent, I declare the recommendation is moved and carried. Next item is item 1320, CEO's Review of Systems and Procedures 2018. Commissioners, any queries or comments? Thank you. Commissioner Hammond?
Thank you, Chair. Look, I'm certainly very happy to move this item, but in saying so, there's probably two things I need to raise. Firstly, some disappointment in that the financial management systems and procedures review had not been undertaken in line with the regulation and, as it would seem, had not been undertaken for some time. I'd certainly seek assurances from the CEO that this matter will be resolved quickly and actions put in place so it can't happen again. But in saying that, I'm delighted to see that the internal audit system works, because it actually did bring up this issue, which is, in my view, a fairly big slip in the system. So as a commissioner, I've certainly got some comfort in the good work of the internal audit system, but in saying that, was quite disappointed to see that matters of such importance had been missed.
Thank you, Commissioner Hammond. Any comments from Commissioner McMath?
Thank you, Chair. My comment relates to the assessment of the current risk management maturity framework on page 696 of the Council papers. I note the journey in our risk management maturity, moving from 2016 assessment through to a view in 2018 of a structured approach. However, there's a big proviso on that, and it reads, it is important to note that this assessment excludes project risk management, which has not been specifically reviewed as part of this maturity assessment, and that would otherwise be seen as intuitive as opposed to aware, structured, integrated or optimised on the journey. I believe that having maturity in project risk management as part of the overall risk management framework is essential, and I would request that management provides a focus on the project risk management being included in the overall framework. I'd like to seek the assurance from management that that will be a focus area. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner McNeice. Could I have a comment on that from any relevant staff member, please?
Chair, I'll make sure I follow this matter up with the ELT and resolve it internally.
Thank
so
you.
So that's the executive leadership team.
Thank you. The issues raised by commissioners I endorse, and I'm pleased that this has come forward, but I do have wish to say that I am concerned on reflection, notwithstanding endorsing the report, that these issues have taken so long to be addressed. The reports refer to dates in June 2017, 2 years ago. One report refers to a 2016 assessment, 3 years ago. There's other similar comments in various pages that I've noted in terms of relevant comments in terms of the guidelines, etc., and also issues which have been continually raised by internal and external auditors. I believe administration, through the CEO, needs to place more priorities on issues. I do not like processes extending over a long period of time. It shows an inaction and a lack of focus on these issues. And I mean, a very good example is that, like in terms of development of compliance training matrices, ensured city is able to clearly identify what compliance and statutory training is required for positions. These matrices are now completed and are being applied by the learning development team. It doesn't say when, and I would imagine that this would be a high priority, as well as other IT controls. So I'm saying to staff and through the CEO that these timelines, which go from beyond a year, are in my view unacceptable, and it's something that we would be, as commissioners, looking very closely at in the future in 2020. Sorry, 2019. It's 2018, isn't it? Jumping the gun. So, and especially as there's regulations, so having made those comments for the benefit of the administration, is someone prepared to move the recommendation?
Seconded.
I have no dissent, but I do hope my comments are taken on board in a very serious manner. Okay, we'll now move.
Mr. Chair, just on that one, obviously I haven't got all the answers over the last couple of years, but I will commit to ensuring that commissioners are briefed. There may be more information that would give you comfort that I can't give you at the moment.
Yes, I understand that. I understand there could be reasons, but it's mainly my concern about timelines and bearing in mind our statutory compliance issues as well. So we move to item 1321, which requires an absolute majority, which is the budget review, as mentioned earlier by one of the directors, for November 2018, and the forecast operating capital budget for the year ending 30th of June. Do I have any questions on this item from any commissioners? Thank you.
No questions.
Commissioner Hammond? I've got no questions, so is someone happy to move the recommendations, which are from item two recommendations with sub-recommendations, that the we approve the budget as set out in the recommendation?
Moved.
Thank you, and I'll second that. Is there any dissent? No, in that case, I declare the recommendation as set out in the agenda is endorsed and carried. Now move to motions of which previous notice has been given. Have any notices of motions been received, Mr. Acting CEO?
No, Chairman.
Thank you. Has any items of urgent business been received?
Chair, Commissioner, there's that item 15.1 that comes up.
Thank you. Okay, this item is headed Confirmation of Appointment Title, Chief Executive Officer, and a recommendation is that Council confirm the appointment title of Mr. M. Jorgensen as CEO for a fixed term contract as outlined in the Special Council Meeting Resolution dated the 13th of November. This is a tidying up exercise as outlined in the report. Thank you. You beat me to it. We have a mover of Commissioner Hammond that the recommendation, which is that Council confirm the appointment title of Mr. M. Jorgensen as CEO for a fixed term contract as outlined in the Special Council Meeting Resolution dated the 13th of November 2018. That's been moved. Do I have a seconder?
Seconded.
I have no dissent, so I declare the motion and to endorse the recommendation is carried accordingly. Thank you. That completes, I think, urgent business, Mr. Acting CEO. Mr. CEO now, okay. I stand corrected. It's getting close. So in that case, I formally now declare the meeting closed at 7:02 or whatever is the appropriate time. Thank you very much, and thank you for the attendance in the gallery. Thank you.